The Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me this week for another special episode, well, first, there's our returning Viking prince, the traveling man known as Dan. Hey, Dan.
Hey, I'm the Mulder to your Skinner. How you doing?
Skinner, really? You had to go right for the baldness, hey, didn't you?
He's the one that everybody had the hots for in the 90s, so it's okay. It's a compliment.
I'd say, well, with my beard, I could just comb it over the top of my head at this point. Anyway, we are also, even more importantly, we are joined by someone who might not even remember herself, that she actually appeared on this podcast over 4.5 years ago, along with her husband and father-in-law, back when we were celebrating, oh God.
Your 100th episode.
Our 100th episode. Yes, you just heard her. I'm talking about, I call the queen of the Jay and Jack podcasting empire and one of the beloved hosts of the broadcast podcast, Colleen. Welcome, Colleen.
Hello, it's good to be here. I remember when we did that one.
It's weird. It's 4.5 years ago, which already sounds like a long time, but because the COVID year seems like a century long, it seems like another lifetime.
Very true. You know? Very true. But that said, can I be the cry check to your Skinner?
Oh, God. Yes.
I mean, if we're calling dibs on people.
That's funny. You know what? Thinking about,
can I be the cry check to Dan Smolder, actually? There we go.
There you go. That makes a bit more sense.
That makes a lot more sense.
So are you saying you want to have a scene where you watch me like swimming in like a tight Speedo for some reason?
Oh boy.
Yes, duh.
Awesome. I got this.
Considering the habit I've taken back up again over the last several months, I'm surprised I'm not Cancer Man for this podcast. So as you might have guessed, if you didn't notice what you were clicking on when you went to listen to this podcast.
You could be if you really want to.
I am. We are here to discuss the latest entry on the greatest TV drama episodes of all time countdown. We have actually reached number 14, and number 14 is Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose, the fourth episode from season 3 of, The X-Files. Now, I'm not sure, we'll see, but it's possible that this might be one of the more debatable choices of quote-unquote best episode of a series that makes the countdown cut. And I'm pretty sure towards the end of the podcast we will discuss at least a few other possibilities. But as far as arguing about this selection, you people out there, that will bring me to my quick disclaimer about this countdown. In case you haven't heard this before, it goes a little something
like
this.
Has Scott ever done anything quick? Sorry.
According to the ladies,
well,
no.
Buckle in, everyone. Scott's got to justify something that he likes. Here we go.
Anyway, so the way we arrived at this countdown was I researched several articles and websites that over the last several years had put together articles and lists about, you know, the best TV episodes of all time, as well as various websites that actually do kind of ranking of episodes for different series, whether it be IMDb or Ranker.com and a few others. A lot of these things are actually based in the UK. It's very strange. They're really into lists out there. Put the information together, you know, sorted out, try to kind of see which were the more chosen episodes, and also how to remove things, because if it was an episode of television that we've actually covered on this podcast, it was no longer eligible. So that's why, for example, there will be no Better Call Saul episodes making the top 20, because we've covered every single episode of Better Call Saul and stuff like that. That's really it, actually. Wow, I did that quicker than I thought I would. All right.
So. Yeah. Hey, wait, so just for clarification, These are the best TV TV drama episodes that you've never talked about before.
Correct. While there might be an episode or two that appears in this countdown that has been talked about, but never given like the full episode coverage.
Never covered in full. Okay.
Right.
So there we go.
So, you know, because several years ago, Dan and I, we did a series of podcasts where we covered every season of Mad Men, and we had guests for each one.
Yes.
You know, Maddie was on a few of them, actually. Just because we covered, you know, whatever season of Mad Men doesn't mean we can't – an episode from that season can't be on the countdown. However, they cannot be an episode from the seventh season because we actually covered that episode by episode on the podcast. So the Mad Men finale could not make the list, for example. Not that it would have anyway, but a certain other episode, which will remain nameless because it's going to appear much later in the countdown, will be appearing. Oh, spoiler, I've already fucked up the list. All right. So this is the bit where I usually give a little bit of history on the show we're talking about. Obviously, that's the X-Files. So to get into that really quickly here, The X-Files, it originally ran from 1993 to 2002 on the Fox network. At the time, it racked up 202 episodes over the course of its first 9 seasons. Then, as many of us know, 14 years later, they did a revival of the series, giving us a 6-episode 10th season in 2016 and a 10-episode 11th season in 2018. We don't need to talk about the middling effort that was. The show also had one failed spinoff, The Lone Gunman, and another Fox series.
I loved The Lone Gunman.
They were just fun characters. And they did something interesting, another Fox series, which I do recall watching at the time, which was so much, was such a laugh riot, Millennium. It technically wasn't a spinoff initially, but they decided to later tie it to the X-Files universe as a kind of a post-cancellation crossover episode, because they wanted to give that series a more proper series finale send-off. Whether it was or not is debatable, but it was one of those things that was done like after the fact. It was like funnily.
Totally forgot about that show.
But there were X-Files characters did appear in Millennium, though. Like there were like Jose Chung appeared. There was an episode where Jose Chung is in it. So.
I guess I didn't think of it as being a spinoff at the time because, you know, that would be, to me, it would be like saying that every show, you know, after Homicide: Life on the Street is a spinoff of that because Richard Belzer's character appeared as that character on like 20 other shows after.
Well, just they're in the same universe. They have to be then in the same universe.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just saying at the time, I don't think people thought of it as a quote unquote spinoff, but yeah, same universe. Exactly.
I totally forgot about that show and Googling it. Like I didn't realize how many people were involved. Like I knew it was a Chris Carter show, but Glenn Morgan was executive producer. James Wong was an executive producer. Like just going through, like I might have to rewatch this show. I liked it. I totally forgot all about it.
It's good. Have you watched?
Yeah. Go on.
Have you seen Carrie Supernatural?
Love Supernatural. I fell out of it after, oh goodness, what was the season where Mitch Pileggi was in it?
He appears in season 3 or 4, I think. I just started
season 5. No, it's not. No, Mitch Pileggi, what's his name that plays Skinner? He's in like season 6 or 7.
Yeah, he was in one episode before, because like there's an episode where like they go back to 1973 and he's in one episode, so if he appears again.
Right, because he plays their grandfather.
Yeah, so cool.
So you're in season 5? Oh, man. The ending of season 5, the finale, is, like, I have rewatched that, like, so many times when I just wanted something to watch. I think the ending of season 5 is incredible. I love seasons 1 through 5. I kind of fell, I mean, once Zach was born, I kind of fell out of all TV. Like, I just stopped having time to, like, watch as much TV that it wasn't, like, you know, something that we were binging or whatever. And there is so much that I have to go back and rewatch. But now that Supernatural is over, I do want to start again from the beginning to the end, because I have actually rewatched seasons 1 through 5, I think twice. Because I love it. It's a great show.
Yeah, and it's done by, like, X-Files people, too. So it's pretty cool.
Is it Glenn Morgan that it does it?
No, it's John Shaiban.
No,
Darren
Morgan. Darren Morgan.
I don't think he did anything for that. I think he only when I looked to see it because I was hoping he would have wrote some of the episodes, but I didn't see him doing any. But maybe Glenn does. I think Glenn does more TV stuff, and like Darren just like shows up to do stuff that Glenn does every now and then.
Okay. Because I think the only episode that I liked out of the reboot of X-Files was the one that Darren Morgan wrote.
Oh, yeah, I think he did. He did one season, I think, and they were like the only good ones.
They were the only good ones out of 3.
Absolutely. I recall trashing it on the podcast. So yeah, I think I'm in total agreement with you on that one.
Yeah. Anyway, so sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Not a problem. Hey. People want to hear voices other than mine. Trust me, I know. Back to wrapping up the history, and as you just mentioned, the creator of the X-Files was Chris Carter.
Kim Manners.
Fascinating
That's
guy.
Who it was. It was Kim Manners, sorry.
Right. Yeah.
And he died during it. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. I will mute myself now.
Don't mute.
I wasn't going to be able to let that go, but now I can. Okay.
It's okay. You don't need to mute yourself, Colleen. The creator of the X-Files was Chris Carter. Interesting guy. He spent several years writing for a surfing magazine and making pottery, you know, in his younger days. And then when he finally broke into TV, he was like knocking about writing like kiddie TV movies for Disney. There's actually a weird entire chain of events and major TV players, which he just happens to run into in his life. And one stepping stone leads to the other, which eventually leads to him developing the X-Files for Fox. But it's a really fascinating story about him. It's one of those things like, I don't know, go read his Wikipedia page. Trust me. You know, he meets one guy at a softball game and that leads to something and that kind of stuff. King of schmoozing, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, those of us who know our TV history, you know, you can see a lot of influences that led to the X-Files. But Dan, I think you would agree with me. The biggest influence probably was Kolchak, the Night Stalker. That's always been my intention.
Oh, yeah. Kolchak,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it had its monster or bizarre phenomenon of the week that, no one else believes is real. Carter pretty much took that idea, mixed in the male-female duo concept of like the old Avengers series from the 1960s. And beyond the sci-fi and horror elements, the show, as we all know, would lean really heavy into government conspiracies, mistrust of authority, which was really the popular fodder back during the Watergate, and maybe nowadays too, quite frankly.
Yeah. I think you pulled the FBI stuff out of Twin Peaks too, because that was like 1 year later. So.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I was thinking about that. And how the 90s was kind of like this cool renaissance for the FBI in the media. Cause, I think Silence of the Lambs with Clarice Starling, Agent Cooper, of course, in Twin Peaks, and then Mulder and Scully on the X-Files. I mean, being an FBI agent, that was cool and funny for a few minutes there. And then you ended up, with Mulder, the quirky, laconic believer, and Scully, the more level-headed and pragmatic skeptic. And it seems like every other person I knew, depending on your preference, you either had a crush on Scully or you had a crush on Mulder. So I think that also might have helped add to the show's popularity as well. So I've always known that Dan was a fan of the X-Files, although I'm still would be interested in hearing what really attracted him to the series. I don't know if I knew that you were into the show, Colleen, even though I do know you have a thing for conspiracies. Rumor has it.
Listen, not 2020 conspiracies. My God, not, please, let's not spread that rumor.
So Bill
I'm
Gates
more like
isn't
pre-2016.
So Bill Gates isn't behind COVID, you sure?
Yes.
Titanic syncing audio into this section of the podcast, just so you know.
Oh, please don't.
what audio am I using for that? Let me get an ice cube tray and smash into it or something.
What?
No, just move on. Move on.
but Colleen, because you're a wee bit younger than me. I mean, my assumption is you didn't watch it when it originally aired. Did you come across it a little bit later on and catch up with it or
no,
something?
No, I did actually.
Oh, okay.
So,
my mistake.
Wow. Here's my X-Files story. I think it's going to surprise you. So I saw my very first episode of the X-Files on February 8th, 1998. And that was the episode Chinga. And, I had just turned, 14 then in 1998? And was that 98 or 99 that Chinga aired?
I'll look it up.
It was in season 5, if I remember correctly. It was season 5. It was 1998, February 8th, 1998. And it was my birthday. And my dad was like, what do you want to watch for your birthday or whatever, however it came up. And it must have been when it was airing on Friday nights. And I was like, I want to watch this X-Files show. And I did. And I you know, have always liked like supernaturally kind of stuff. And from then on, I was like totally hooked. And my good friend at the time, who was in my first period class, because I think I was in eighth grade at the time, eighth grade, and she was also a big X-Files fan. And when she found out that I was watching it, like we like would pass notes back and forth about X-Files episodes. This is when they would air the FX marathons, and like it was in syndication on NFX. And I would tape it on a VHS tape every time it came on so I could catch up. And my grandparents had a printer. So when I went to my grandparents' house, and actually one of the reasons I was a few minutes late to this recording is because Jay suggested that I go try to find it. And I know I have it here somewhere, but my grandpa got me these like, you know, old binders. And I used to print out the episode descriptions with like trivia and whatnot from it. And like copy, like cut and paste them together because, you know, the printers back then, like, you know, you couldn't like just select certain things to print. And I created my own encyclopedia, like index of X-Files episodes. And I mean, like, I know that they're in here because I set up my office where I'm sitting during the pandemic, and I definitely 100% came across them back early summertime, and I was looking through them, and now I can't remember where I put them, but I will find them and I will send you guys a picture of it. But like I had like, you know, my own X-Files like encyclopedias, and like we used to talk about it and like, you know, what did you catch on FX today? And like, what did you, and like we would go online, and this was early days of the internet. It was 1998, 1999, 2000. And, you know, try to find all the trivia that we could, all of the stuff that it might be based on, like whatever was available. And we were like super into it. And I remember the countdowns, the X-Files countdowns that they would have every Thanksgiving. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, what, 12 hours, 24 hours, whatever it is. And I would just get VHS tapes and just tape them all because I was so obsessed with the X-Files and really just want to make sure that I had seen everything. And I would like, you know, got the list of like the list of episodes, check them off like when I finally saw them. And like, I was obsessed with the X-Files. I loved it so much. It is my first real, like, I know most people got into this whole, like, you know, internet. I wasn't on message boards, but I discovered message boards and would read them, like what people were saying about it. But of course, I was only like 14, so I definitely wasn't like, I swear I didn't like, my grandpa was there with me and he wouldn't like let me have a screen name or anything. So like I didn't actually post them. But, like I would find them and read it. Like, I was, you know, obsessed with it. And I know most people we'll cite like Twin Peaks or Lost as like the two biggest things that got them into like fandoms. And I can say 100% certainty that the X-Files was my first experience and taste in like a super fandom. So, yeah.
I'm glad I asked.
Yeah. Like I was obsessed with it.
You, the way you sound, I mean, because everything you said kind of, it's uber geeky, but it's still something really cool about it. And there's a weird parallel between us that we now have, because when I was of that age, you know, like in 13, 14, whatever, I also put together a scrapbook based on a TV show, a weekly TV show, and I would clip out articles and stuff and the ratings from the TV guide and you know, every week and everything. And I pasted them all together. For some reason, I drew Garfield on the cover, which makes no sense because the show had nothing to do with Garfield. But I remember just finding it like several years ago. It was like, you know, stapled together, like way too many staples. And I'm like, why did I draw Garfield? It was about the TV show Dallas. And so nice. I'd be the one like 13-year-old boy who was like, you know, sneaking in and stealing like the Inquirer and the Star in the supermarket just to rip out the articles and paste them and shit like that. I'm not so proud of that now. Anyway.
Oh my god, don't be ashamed. Are you kidding me?
I'm just having a memory of being in homeroom and arguing with someone about how Dallas is better than Dynasty and back and forth all the time.
Oh, that checks out.
You know, other people, you know, like, well, the Yankees sucked in the mid 80s, so I didn't have baseball to talk about. I had to be TV shows. Anyway, and Dan, did you watched it from the get go, or did you also?
No, I started like around season six or so. Like the local like music store, like a Sam Goody type place in my town, like released season one on DVD, and I'd watched like a few episodes like on VHS and stuff. And I remember when I was little, I watched a season one episode, Born Again, where like I just like remember being.
Oh yeah.
I think. I was 12, and I distinctly remember like it being on Friday night, like at my dad's girlfriend's house, and like the scene where like the little girl like kills some guy with like he gets caught in a bus or something, like part of his jacket gets caught in a bus, and he gets choked to death. And I remember seeing that when I was 12 at like 9 o'clock at night and being traumatized. I had seen a little bit and it was cool, but then I bought season one on DVD, and like that was one of the first shows they released in DVD, so it was $100 a season. So then I started.
Oh God, that's right.
So I would buy it because it came out every 6 months. Like exactly every 6 months, they released a new season. So I managed to catch up by season six and watch it then. But I remember when I finished season four, I was so like wound up about wanting to know what happened at the beginning of season five. I bought like the first half of season five from like some like some weird video discs from Hong Kong, like that they played at like some completely fucked up.
Oh my god!
I ordered that shit to like see Edux one and two and see what the fuck happened. But
man, season four is great.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
That's Gethsemane at the end of it, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Where they? I don't want to give spoilers, but yeah.
Ow! Spoil whatever.
Is that the one that takes place at Mulder's mom's house?
No, that's season three finale. Season four is the one where like they're up in like the mountains in Canada or something, and it's all icy.
Oh yeah. Okay, so okay. Yep.
Oh boy, we got two super fans here. I should let them talk for the podcast. I just realized it's funny that I threw in that weird anecdote about Dallas, because in a weird way, that's kind of connected to how I started watching the X-Files. Because I watched Dallas my entire life, and pretty much Dallas was on Friday nights at 9 o'clock, and Dallas lasted until late spring of 1991, and then I had a Friday at 9 o'clock hole in my heart, which then about a year and a half to whatever year and a half 2 years later was replaced by the X-Files. And that became, and that showed, that also showed how I matured. It's like I went from soap operas to that.
You went from soap operas to supernatural soap opera.
Yeah, and you know, in a weird way, I actually used Twin Peaks as my bridge, because that's kind of a merging of the two.
Oh,
anyway,
yeah, definitely.
So one thing about the episode we're going to be talking about, I would say it falls into that category of the X-Files. They're standalone episodes. Now, for a lot of fans, I'm not saying
Monster of the Week, you mean?
The Monster of the Week kind of thing. Those are for a lot of people, those tend to be the more popular episodes than the ones that are focused more on the serialized conspiratorial storylines. Not hardcore X-Files fans. I'm not speaking for them. I know, but I know those are usually the ones that tend to stand out with a lot of people's memories first and foremost.
Yeah.
Maybe because those are the ones that tend to be, those get to be the funny ones if they want to go in that direction. So the good thing about the reason why it's a good thing that this episode is at, usually when I have to do these countdown podcasts, depending where the episode is in the season, I have to kind of set the stage for where we are with the characters and the storyline in the season. Don't really need to do that for this episode. You don't really need to know what was going on in the season before we get to this episode. It really doesn't really play any part in it. You know, they're dealing with alien human hybrid experimentation, and I think is that the season with the black oily substance starts to show up, Dan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I always remembered that. But obviously, go on.
Oh no, go ahead. Sorry.
Keep going, please. No, I was just going to say, but obviously, we don't need to talk about that unless you want to, because I know you want to talk about Krycek. No.
I love me some Nick Leah. I'm not going to lie. early celebrity crush. Him and Dean Cain, which I'm very embarrassed about now.
But
he was Superman, and I was in third grade.
I'm so very sorry.
I know, man. Talk about bummers.
You know, it's one, you know what, in the different super universes, it's one thing when you discover videos by John Schneider, who played like Pa Kent on the Smallville TV show.
Oh, God, I know. Those are also very disappointing.
But you know what? You kind of could have guessed that about him. That wasn't, you know, he was one of the Duke boys. It's not a big shocker. Dean Cain, that one made me go, oh, boy. All right. You've just become my least favorite Superman now.
I know.
So anyway, we are here to talk about Clyde Bruckman's final repose. A few deets on the episode itself, one of which I didn't know ahead of time because I don't have that encyclopedic knowledge that scrapbook keeper or Danny knows. Episode was directed by David Nutter, a name that many will recognize for his work on shows like Game of Thrones. Also, he's someone who is known for directing possibly more TV pilots than almost anybody else that went on to become series. You guys were talking about Supernatural. He directed the pilot for Supernatural.
No fucking way.
I just mentioned Smallville. He directed the pilot for Smallville and Arrow and The Flash and all these other shows. If you look him up, I kid you not, it's like a couple dozen different shows. He's like the go-to guy. You want your show to go to series, get David Nutter to direct it for you.
Interesting. That's actually very, with a name like David Nutter, you thought that I would have recognized it and remembered it from, like, because I've seen the pilots of all these series.
Yeah. Hey, if you learn just one thing every day, that makes that day worthwhile.
Seriously. Also, fun fact, Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose, directed by David Nutter, was written by Darren Morgan that we were just talking about and aired on October 13th, which is Chris Carter's birthday and 10/13 Mulder's birthday as well.
Oh, very nice.
You're welcome. I call 10/13 X-Files Day.
I am not.
I'm a loser.
No, excellent. I can skip the part about Darren Morgan. Yeah. I mean, I am 99% sure we will be discussing at least one, if not more, Darren Morgan written episodes later in the podcast. I mean, there's one I feel we got to talk about a little bit because it's so much fun. But again,
are you talking about? Okay, yes, we'll get to that. I know what you're talking about. I don't even need to ask.
We've already made a reference to it in this podcast, as a matter of fact, to a certain extent, or at least a character. But again, we are here to talk about Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose, which I believe also scored a couple Emmys, if I'm not mistaken. I know Peter Boyle won for guest star in a dramatic series. And was it actually writing that it won? Did it win the writing award? I have it written somewhere in my notes, right? I can't find it. Is that right?
Yeah, I think outstanding writing in a drama, I think, sounds right.
I'm very sure that's what it was. Here we go. Yep. Darren Morgan and Peter Boyle. Why did I put it so far down in my notes? Anyway. Okay. So let's talk about Clyde. I'll just say from the top, for me personally, this was always one of my favorite episodes. I'm biased because not just because of, you know, it being the X-Files and whatever. I was already a big Peter Boyle fan growing up because my mother took me to see Young Frankenstein as a child, and I'd probably seen it, you know, a couple dozen times before this because, you know, unlike crap like Robin Hood, Men in Tights, or Spaceballs, that's actually a good Mel Brooks movie. That's right. I just had to get that shot in.
I was fucking with you the whole time.
Me and Brian were talking about that, you know, after a podcast, and I was like, he can't be serious. You know, Jamie's screwing with me, but Dan, he can't be. So we've all just watched this episode within the last couple of days. And obviously, well, we already made clear how big a fan the two of you are. So I'll hit each one of you. What did you take anything different from it, or that you didn't remember? I mean, was this in fact one of your favorites or not? You know, what was your general feeling about it? Colleen, I'll try you first before I hit Dan.
So actually I did. I've always liked this one. As a Long Island girl, I always remember Peter Boyle as the guy from Everybody Loves Raymond.
That's right. That's right. I loved him on Frank Romano. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But no, I actually, I was a big fan of this episode. I've always been a big fan of this episode. I like that it has everything that the X-Files, you know, that you loved about the X-Files, if you were, whether you were a casual fan or not. It has the Mulder Scully like dynamic that, you know, isn't super hit you over the head, but also, you know, hit you over the head with the skeptic versus the believer, where she actually becomes kind of like the believer in the end, which is like, you know, their classic dynamic. It had humor. It had, you know, a memorable lead character that actually brought a lot to a character that could have been forgettable, but like he plays him perfectly.
Right.
It had, you know, your classic villain that is just a classic X-Files villain, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the writing is sharp. It moves quickly. It's, you know, never feels like you can't pay attention. Like, you got to pay attention to every scene. And there was actually one scene that I did not remember. The scene where he is describing him laying and decomposing.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, it's so visual that I can't believe that I did not remember. Like, it's so graphic. I can't believe I didn't remember that at all. And honestly, I had kind of forgotten that he committed suicide at the end. Like, once I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. But, like, I had forgotten.
I'm actually in the exact same boat as you. I actually had forgotten the decomposing shot as well. It reminded me, fast forward several years later on MTV or whatever, the Peter Gabriel video, Digging in the Dirt, which has, you know, all that stuff happening and decomposing into the earth. And, yeah, I had forgotten. I know he dies. I remembered that. I couldn't remember the circumstances of it that led to it. And I was like, oh my God, that's right. He kills himself. Oh,
right.
God.
And like, I remember the scene with Scully holding.
Colleen, your audio disappeared.
Oh no. Okay. So like, I remember the scene with Scully holding his hand at the end of the bed. Like, I remember that, and right. I couldn't quite remember how he passed. And then once I saw the bag, I was like, oh, that's right. Like, it all came back to me. But yeah, I'd totally forgotten.
Do you think that was an actual tear, or was that condensation from having the bag over his head?
Yeah, both.
Hmm. Okay, I'm just curious, because it's one of those things when I saw it, I remember thinking, oh, it looks like a tear, but I wonder if that's actually a tear or condensation that just looks like a tear. Cause, you know,
well, there's definitely condensation. Like, there's definitely condensation in the bag, but, right, like, right, right. I feel like he also could have known what he was doing and still cried.
Yeah, I'll go with it. It doesn't take anything away from the moment. I was just curious. The other thing I would throw in as far as highlights about the episode, I'm going to say that Yaffe's eyebrows are like the alternate MVP of this episode. They're amazing.
They are some mighty fine eyebrows.
They're amazing.
You can't be a over the top fake psychic on TV if you don't have eyebrows. Like, get the fuck out of here if you're not going to do that.
Oh, he was fabulous. And the gag where he thinks that Mulder is the skeptic instead of Scully is, you know, it's,
oh, I know, I love that.
It's like you have just proven you are the worst psychic ever.
Oh my God, I know.
Dan, I know you've always been. You've always leaned heavily into the conspiratorial related episodes, but I never knew what your take was on this one. So what were your feelings about it?
Oh yeah. I've always thought it was great. I enjoyed the funny one later in the season a bit more, not just cause it's funnier, but this one, like, as I mature, I appreciate the writing and like the subtlety of the humor more this time. So, you know, I think it's definitely, you know, it's a better episode, just not quite as funny as the latter season.
All right. Go on.
Yeah. I enjoyed watching it. I forgot that it took place in the Twin Cities area, which is like an hour and a half for me. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Nice. I had, honestly, every time I ever see like lemon meringue pie, I do think of this episode. Because it's so memorable, right?
this time I noticed, like, you can hear, like, the bad guy drop the pie on the ground. Like, you know, like, you don't see it happen, but you can hear it. And, like, I don't think I noticed that before this time. So that was kind of cool.
Banana cream. Sorry. Just had to do that. Yeah, you're right. Because, we're going to talk about it later anyway. But I know you're referring to Jose Chung's From Space episode.
From Outer Space.
Is it From Outer Space or From Space? I thought it was just From Space.
From Outer Space.
Okay.
Well, no, it's From Outer Space.
Okay. I will defer. You know what? Again, this is what happens when I decide not to look at my notes. So I'm just going off memory. I shouldn't do that when I'm...
No, because the title of the book is From Outer Space.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But going to what...
So you like From Outer Space, but you like Jose Chung's better than this one, Dan?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's a lot funnier. It's more over the top and stuff. So
I think I need to rewatch Jose Chung's because I've always been more partial to this one.
Yeah. I absolutely agree with Dan that it's overall probably a funnier episode, and there are probably a few other really funny ones that stand out. I literally just finished watching one about 10 minutes before we started recording. But by the same token, because the way this tells such a nice complete story and it has an emotional resonance, which those episodes don't necessarily have, is why it's a better episode. If we're just talking about which is the funnier episode, I think Jose Chung is fine. If you get Charles Nelson Reilly to be in your episode, you've already guaranteed it's going to be bizarre and funny to begin with. Not to mention everyone else who shows up in that episode, but we'll talk about that later. But I think there's just something about the whole Scully Bruckman connection that, you know, all the way up to his death. I mean, I'm known, and I've talked about it on the podcast recently, I'm a pretty soft touch when it comes to the tear ducts. And if I don't know if that was a tear in his eye, but I know there was a tear in my eye. So,
no.
See, that's what we call podcasting magic. Anyways,
if I rewatched all the funny episodes now, I might have a different take on it, just because like my taste changed, you know. So like a few years ago, I might have thought like Bad Blood was funnier because the way Mulder like perceives Luke Wilson as just looking like absolute garbage, and like Scully thinks he's super hot is just funny. But like now, maybe like the Darren Morgan episode from season 9, where like it's just like the bad guys, or I don't know if he's a bad guy, but he's dressed like Kolchak the entire episode and is just filled with all sorts of weird inside jokes that I get more now. So maybe I'd find that funnier now.
Yeah,
Bad Blood's the one I just finished watching, actually.
Oh, it's fucking funny.
Wait, that's from season... Which one is that?
That's from season 4, where like they're like all vampires in the town.
Oh, 4. Okay.
Well, no, it's season 5. Season 5.
Oh,
season
Bad...
Five?
Are you talking... Okay. Okay. No, I... Okay. It's okay. You're talking about Bad Blood.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. I thought you said there was a season 9 episode that...
Yeah. The one where Darren... The Darren Morgan one from episode 9, where like... I remember just the only good episode from... No, episode 10. The one that came out, whatever. So... Season 10, the Darren season Morgan 10. Episode.
The
Were
Monster.
Right. Yeah,
Mulder and Scully meet the Were Monster. That's the one that I liked from season 10, like the only one.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and that's just filled with just so many like really nerdy inside jokes. You know, like I said, like he's dressed like Kolchak the Night Stalker like the entire time, and there's just constant bunker shit.
Okay, you said season 9, and that was what was confusing me.
Yeah.
That's the one that they have the tribute to, what's his face, who died, we just talked about, Kim Manners.
Yeah.
Where he's leaning against the headstone.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I actually know what you're talking about, too. There you go.
Yeah, because Manners would have died between season 9 and 10, so.
Right, in that long stretch of time, because he died in 2009. Right.
Yeah, because Supernatural it was season 4 then, so that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that really brings it home with this episode, as far as the humor is concerned, beyond the little gags or jokes, whether it be the Yappy the horrible psychic or whatever, it all goes back to Peter Boyle and his delivery. I mean, Every other line he has just hits home just so perfect. Whether it's him reacting to Fox Mulder's name, which it's about time someone reacted to that name. That's a great gag. You know, I'm supposed to believe that's a real name. You know?
Right, and nobody else could pull it off but him, like right. Cranky old man.
And one thing I always remembered, even, you know, being 20 years ago, I remembered the gag, the line about autoerotic asphyxiation.
Yes, I had forgotten, and then as soon as he said it, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Oh,
and I went going, oh my God, it's like, oh, that makes perfect sense, actually. But I think one of his best moments is, even though I am 99.9% sure this is a tightly written, go by the, you know, everyone followed the script perfectly kind of storytelling, there's, maybe it's just the way he does it. I always, for some reason, thought when Peter Boyle does the little, or I should say, or Clyde Bruckman does the little old Johnny Carson Karnak impression, you know, the killer. I always thought that was Peter Boyle improvising. I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure that's in the script. But it kind of feels like just something he just came up with, just the way he plays it. It's kind of like the way Bill Murray does that in a lot of his movies, where it turns out it was scripted, but it always has that improvisational feel to it. So
you never know. You never know.
I'm gonna do some research for some other podcast. No, you think I should look up things he should have done before recording. Anyway,
but you never know. I mean, because yeah, you watch it with closed captioning too.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So did I, and I saw that as well. And I was like, oh, I don't think I ever picked up on that.
I knew. I mean, I grew up watching Johnny Carson, so I knew it was Karnak, so it wasn't that.
But, yeah, I did not. So well, cool. Yeah,
I'm like twice your age, so what do you expect? So I'm trying to think of what else to talk about with this one. I mean, there when you have all the humor, but I think one of the moments that really always got me in this episode, when Scully finally asks him to tell her how she dies, and when he just looks at her and says, "You don't." That's such a great. I was like, that's kind of a moment. Like, if you're a writer, you just get up for a moment and go like, "Ah, there it is. That's it. I'm gonna walk away now. You know, drop the mic, yes, drop the pen, great. Walk away." It was such a nice little thing there. So, is she immortal?
Question.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah, is she immortal? Yes. Yes, she is. We know that. Question. Do you think, like, just to get a little bit deep into the episode, that when the killer asks him, like, you know, he says, you're not supposed to kill me now. And the killer's like, why not? And he's like, I don't know. And they both look confused. Do you think that was him actively changing his future in a way? But he knew that Scully was going to be on the bed, but he always thought that maybe the killer kills him. But because he foresaw himself in his home bed and not there, he realized that it wasn't quite right. And do like think that maybe there's a little bit of like Clyde kind of like changed his own fate in a way, which was something that was a very big theme of the episode, that he didn't want to change the future.
Dan, you want to take a stab at this before I try?
Yeah, I kind of got that impression too. But just like he just kind of, you know, changed it a little bit.
I thought he was trying to guide his destiny in that direction. And since he had already kind of, you know, here he took a shot from the 3-point line saying, you know, we're in bed and you're looking at me lovingly and all, like, it wouldn't work if the guy just, you know, just guts him there. So he just changes it that way. Now when he says, I don't know, that's the thing that kind of makes me wonder is he consciously doing it? Or it's just something inexplicable. He can't put his finger on it, but he knows this is not the way it's supposed to go. That I'm a little more unsure about. I like to think that and then he ends up killing himself anyway. Now, one might ask, why does he kill himself? But, you know, actually, that's a good question. Why does he kill himself?
I think he was just tired of it, because he has that line where he's talking to Mulder, like, I don't know, I can't change the future or something. Maybe it's as insignificant as my dad never meets my mom and I'm never born. Okay, I'll help you. So I think it was just like your signal that this dude is depressed and he doesn't want this gift anymore. He just wants out of it. He wants relief.
Yeah, he's definitely suffering from a level of depression as we see him, whether it's on the job and how that goes. And by the way, who wouldn't like your insurance salesman telling you how you're going to die or be maimed in some horrible accident in a couple of years as a way of convincing you to buy insurance? I think that should work.
It's always possible, too, that, like, he was supposed to get killed by the bad guy there, and he saw it, but, like, he decided to, like, not by changing things up, like, maybe he would keep Mulder from getting killed down in the kitchen, and then, but he still, like, killed himself just to, like, you know, die like he was supposed to, maybe something like that.
See, now, I always thought that he knew that Mulder was meant to kill him because he says, and then he saw nothing. And I always meant to say, oh, Mulder's going to kill him because he doesn't see anything anymore.
Right. It was weird because my take on it when I was watching it, and it's kind of in line with that. I thought he's seeing the killer's end, not Mulder's end. And he's seeing it from the killer's perspective, and that's why he sees nothing. So when he's telling that to Mulder, it's like, no, he's not telling Mulder how he's going to die. He's telling him how the killer's going to die. Because Mulder, you're going to die from autoerotic asphyxiation. We've already established that.
That's the same that I interpreted it to, that, like, he realizes Mulder's going to kill him, but he doesn't want to say it because then it might change it. And, but the killer, like, so you're led to believe the killer is psychic or whatever, which, of course, because how else would the killer know to send him that note? But at the same time, like, the killer was so sure that he was meant to kill Clyde Bruckman then, and, like, but he's also so impressionable and so crazy that, like, he believes him, like, no, this isn't when you kill me. You kill me at some other point. So, like, at what point does the timeline change? Like, or were there always different threads and strings to pull on that Clyde Bruckman understood and he knew which way he had to go? And then once he had done that, you know, it was time for his life to end because he had fulfilled what he was supposed to do, which was save Mulder and get the killer killed.
Yeah, I do agree with that perspective because this is probably the first thing he's done in his life with some real meaning. It's finally his life has added up to something, because before this, he obviously doesn't seem like he has any sort of family or any sort of legacy beyond that. He has this ability, which really hasn't worked out so great for him because it's not the best psychic power, you know?
Right. that poor neighbor and that dog.
Oh, God. I wonder if that somehow stayed with me subliminally somehow, or subconsciously, I should say.
Because you've always been scared of your dog eating you after you die?
No, but you're close. I've always made jokes about the reason why I won't kill myself in my own house is that I always have this image of the cat's going to eat my eyes. So that's why when I was, you know, teetering on the brink about 6 years ago, my whole plan was to throw myself in front of a subway train. I said, this way the cat can't eat me.
Oh, Scott, this just got dark.
Yeah, well, welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast.
and of course, several episodes from now, the dog's going to get killed too. So that's not very pleasant either.
Oh man!
I totally didn't remember that.
R.I.P. Queequeg. Sorry, dog.
I was wondering if that was the same dog from that.
That's when episode. She gets Queequeg. Yeah.
Okay. Because, like, when I saw the dog, like, want the dog, I was like, oh yeah, she does end up with that dog, but doesn't. She doesn't always have that dog. What happens to that dog? Okay, so it is the same dog. Okay, great. <Yeah. laughs>
Mystery solved.
I gotta do a rewatch. After I do Supernatural, I'm just going to watch the first 9 seasons of The X-Files and the one episode from episode 10.
All right, so between Supernatural and X-Files, that should take you to, like, 2024?
Oh, I know. But honestly, like, Dan, I envy you so much that you're going to get to watch, like, you're watching season 5 for the first time. Like, it's just, it's really good.
Yeah, I watched seasons 1, I watched, like, 80 episodes in, like, 2 weeks or something. I've just been fucking hitting it hard, so.
It's so good. And, like, even when it gets kind of, like, not as great, the later, like, I haven't seen the last, you know, like, 5 years, but, like, you know, I watched till season 6 or 7, and I definitely watched all of 6, so it must have been 7 that I stopped. And, like, even the episodes that weren't great, like, you're still just so, like, you're, like, there for the Winchester brothers that you're, like, you know, I'm here for it. Like, let's just go on this ride together. It's kind of like when I watched Bones until the bitter end. And yeah. I was like, Bones was definitely not great the last like two seasons, but I just loved hanging out with the characters. So I was like, all right, give me more.
I don't remember if I watched that all the way to the end or not. I can't remember. Cause I remember I was starting to get more and more tired of it after a while. They were kind of ruining some of the characters. You were about to say something then?
Yeah, Supernatural. It's been really great. It feels like early X-Files because it's like done by X-Files people in Canada. Like when X-Files was like at its peak, I'd say, and you know, before they moved to LA. So just, you know, it doesn't look like X-Files. Like they're not reusing the same locations, but it just kind of has the same vibe. So I just kind of, you know, so it just kind of seems like it's just, you know, good nostalgia, but it has like, maybe they don't have quite as many terrible actors as they do in the first season of X-Files, because there's some really bad guest stars in season one, but, really bad.
We've watched enough shows of really bad guest actors, Dan, so
yeah.
welcome to the CW, so anyway.
You'll never hear the song Wayward Son the same ever again.
All right. Sweet. Memo to self, I'm going to have to work Supernatural into the description of this episode, apparently. So.
Yeah, Supernatural also has a ton of BSG people in it, too. Like, you know, like BSG characters show up, which is awesome because I'm a huge BSG fan, so it's always cool.
Yeah.
And also, it's the reason why you should watch The Boys, Dan, since Kripke's behind that, too. So,
yeah, I added to my list, so I'll get to it. I've been.
Oh, The Boys.
Such a good
show. Took me a hot minute to get into The Boys, probably like all the first season, and then, you know, it's a really good show too.
Yeah.
But I think I still like Umbrella Academy better.
It's hard because the second season of Umbrella Academy was so good, but I think I'm still gonna pop The Boys a little bit ahead of it, only because the Umbrella Academy is still somewhat derivative of something else. So I just use it as a way to knock it down a notch, but, there's like three shows that are all have certain similarities to each other that I kind of group together. It's, you know, Umbrella Academy, The Boys, and Doom Patrol. They all kind of scratch that same spot. They're all in that kind of same genre, you know, whatever. The Boys can be a bit more out there and explicit, And
no, just explicit. The Boys is incredible. I'm sure Dan knows this and doesn't mind, but The Boys is incredibly graphic.
Oh yeah, and
they are not afraid to kill a kid. Let me tell you.
And see, and what's his face, Jensen Ackles from Supernatural will be joining.
It's gonna be in season three.
And as all our listeners know, because they listen to our podcast about The Boys already. Anyway, I got a pimp for ourselves here.
I'll get to it for too long. Cool. I'm just watching Seinfeld for the first time, so it takes me a while sometimes.
Wow. So back to wrapping up things on Clyde Bruckman here. One little thing I kind of noted I thought was kind of interesting. Looking at this episode. Oops, ow. Look, at least it wasn't my toe. Looking at this episode where you can – and a thing about the X-Files where you can have – you know, such a nice deft mix of humor, but also have something that's kind of creepy and macabre in it. And they kind of hit the nail on the head at the end of the episode when you have Scully watching, you know, an old Laurel and Hardy movie. And if anyone was wondering what that was, she's actually watching the movie The Bullfighters. There's a running gag in that little movie about this guy named Muldoon, which is just a great name from, you know, from the olden times. Muldoon, who had spent 5 years in prison due to the fact he was wrongly identified by private detectives Stan and Ollie. And he pledges when he gets out of prison, if he ever runs into those two again, I'll skin them alive. So at the end, they've been skinned alive, so they're just skeletons walking off at the end. It's ridiculous. But I just like that they just stuck that on at the end of this episode. Yeah, I was very pleased with watching this one all over again. It hit all the spots I remembered from watching it years ago. I probably haven't seen this episode in easily, probably at least 15 years or more than that, maybe. Right. So, as a result of watching this, and as we always do for these greatest blah, blah, blah podcasts, I also watched several other episodes just to get myself back into the X-Files universe. I think you guys probably, well, Dan, you kind of rewatch the X-Files every few months from what I understand. So
no, not quite. When they came out on Blu-ray, I started rewatching it and I got most of the way through it, but it's been a few years. Whenever that happened, I started it, but it's been a little while.
So, I mean, I think we're at the point where, you know, I think it's kind of understandable why when it comes to writers, critics, or overall popular opinion, that's why this episode tends to be the one that kind of rises to the top, is the one that gets selected as the best episode, not just of the X-Files, but it, like I said, in just the pantheon of television itself. But as Dan already mentioned, you know, X-Files fans, it might not be their favorite. You know, you might have 10 X-Files fans, you might get 10 different responses, or at least 4 or 5. So,
you will definitely get 10 different responses.
So I figured, you know, especially now that we've established we got 2 super fans here, apparently, I figured I'd ask you guys, you know, what, you know, maybe if you wanted to mention a couple of your favorite episodes and why, and we can, that way we can finally talk about Jose Chung's From Outer Space, which was such a perfect episode to watch now. Because of one of the guest stars in it. It was just, which gave that a certain kind of a, that's kind of sad, but beautiful. So, I didn't give an order. Well, Dan, you want to talk about Jose Chung a little bit?
No, I still want to talk about Clyde Ruckman's, but okay. No, I do. Just one more thing about it. Whenever I watch these Darren Morgan episodes, I always see like a couple different things that are kind of, you know, little things that are on screen that I didn't notice before. But this time, when they're playing cards, and the police officer that's about to get killed has like aces over eights in his hand, I'm like, oh, that man's hand. I like that.
Oh, I did not know that. Because I didn't know that was a dead man's hand, but that's brilliant. I mean, as soon as he's like lung cancer, you're like, oh, this motherfucker's gonna die in a second.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that was like Wild Bill Hickok's hand or something. I think that's why they call it the dead man's hand.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, but like they really show it on screen that he's got 3 aces and 2 8s. So that was kind of, you know, just Darren Morgan's a smart writer and they're good at squeezing and stuff like that.
I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah.
I'm gonna write that down for the Deadwood podcast now. All right.
Jose Chung's is just great. There's just so much just bonker stuff in there. I mean, this episode, you've got, you know, the stupendous Yappy shows up in that episode as the narrator of the really shitty alien autopsy video. And it's just awesome.
I love the fact that even watching it so many years later, that I was picking up on things that were little cute gags that had more meaning then than they do now. Like the shirt that the guy who is wearing, the t-shirt that kid is wearing, the one who kind of who videotaped the autopsy, it's for a different Fox TV show that I think, I don't know if it was a Carter show. Was it a Carter show, Space Above and Beyond, or not? It wasn't his show, was it?
No, he didn't do that.
But it was a show that kind of had a lot of hype, kind of came and went really fast. It was kind of funny that they had a kid wearing the shirt.
Space Above and Beyond was created and written by Glenn Morgan and James Wong.
There you go. So it was from the X-Files folks, whatever. What's with Darren Morgan and pies?
I know. I don't know.
He loves pie.
And I don't like sweet potato, and I can't imagine I'd like sweet potato pie. So I don't know how Mulder ate an entire pie. How do you have the idea to come up with a joke where just like Mulder eats an entire pie? Like, where does that come from?
I remember when I saw it way back when, I thought they were riffing on Agent Cooper by having Agent Mulder ordering pie after, but instead of going with cherry or some other fruit pie, the worst pie possible to pick, sweet potato pie, really?
And just
it's
eating
a good
an
James
entire
Taylor song though.
One piece of pie per question is just ridiculous.
But it made for such a funny scene.
You're welcome.
I also love the one thing I had forgotten about that episode. I remembered that one of the two men in black, of course, was Jesse the Body Ventura. Absolutely, I absolutely remembered that.
And Alice Trebek.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I was talking. That's why it's so appropriate to watch that now, since he had just passed away. And I was like,
I gotta rewatch Alice that episode. Trebek.
It's so fucking good.
What I didn't remember is that at one point, Jesse the Body actually does a wrestling maneuver in the episode. And I was like, I did not remember that he actually, that there was a reason why you got Jesse the Body Ventura. He actually does a wrestling move on the guy. You know, does like a backbreaker.
Yeah, he does backbreaker on that kid, yeah.
I did not remember that at all. I remembered him speaking far more eloquently than we ever would imagine Jesse the Body speaking. But it's a very funny episode. Not as much Mulder in it as you'd think there would be, but it's a very funny episode.
Yeah.
Colleen, any that comes up? Oh, you guys can go back and forth, whatever episodes you want to talk about.
Yeah. I know. I'm going down the list, and I have so many favorites, and it's amazing to me how many episodes that I genuinely loved that David Nutter directed. He directed a lot of X-File episodes, like mm-hmm. a lot of them. I'm trying to pick one, and it's really tough because I love so many X-File episodes.
I'll tell you my favorite X-Files scene while you think about it.
Okay, please do.
I'm not sure what my favorite episode is exactly, but my favorite scene from all of X-Files, I think it's from The Red and the Black, where there's a scene where Scully's getting hypnotized to remember like an abduction event happening at the Ruskin Dam, and then like all sorts of crazy shit happens, and it's just, for whatever reason, it's just such a good scene. Like, the music's awesome and the editing's awesome, and she's just doing a good job. And that's just like my favorite scene, Scully like being hypnotized to remember the crazy fucking shit happening there. In season 5.
So, question. As I scroll down the list.
Yeah.
I remember not liking this episode as much as I wanted to, but I'm wondering if I should go back. The Unnatural, the one that David Duchovny wrote and directed?
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Is it great?
I think it's more of a, if you like baseball, I think it's more of a baseball thing.
I love baseball, but as I'm looking, I'm like, you know, I remember not like being kind of bored by it, but I wonder if I went back and rewatched it now, if I would appreciate it on a whole other level.
You probably watched it when you were young, and back then you still like didn't like black people because, you know, you were stuck there, so maybe you'd like it more now.
Okay, there is so much about that I need to address, but aren't going to, other than yikes.
This isn't on the podcast very often anymore.
I'm making fun of Colleen's conservative upbringing.
I am from Long Island, and it is pretty fucking racist and anti-Semitic. I can't decide which it's more of sometimes.
Let's make sure we specify that's a specific part of Long Island you're talking about, not all of Long Island.
Suffolk County, the biggest, the highest, you know, populated county, blah, blah, blah.
Because there are some parts along on that are heavily Jewish.
There are.
I know. I used to go to Thanksgiving the one like every year for several years.
That would be Nassau County. Okay, but anyway, season 6 is actually, you know, pretty underrated, but I think it's pretty great. Just saying. Okay, so as I'm looking, like, there's so many. I can't pick just one, but like... there are just some, like, Small Potatoes is really fun episode. What else? Like, I'm looking down the list. It's really tough to pick one. I learned what the word Sizergy was thanks to the X-Files. I was like, this is a great word.
Did you play it in Scrabble?
What?
Did you ever play it in Scrabble?
I don't really play Scrabble too much.
Oh, you should.
Which I know I should play it more. Dwayne Barry is a great one. I like Dwayne Barry. I'm trying to pick. Oh, you know, one of my Squeeze and Tombs. I really like that character.
Oh yeah. That's going
right?
That's coming back to the beginning, isn't it? Right?
That's the third episode. It was like the first real monster of the week episode was Squeeze.
Yeah, that's right.
Letter Boots.
Yeah, he did a good job. And then like 30 years ago, or 30 years later, he marries a 12-year-old. So I guess he did a good job.
Oh, I know,
job.
Right? Oh, but she's like dating Brian Austin Green now, so I guess that's a step up.
Oh, my God.
A step down for him. Oh, my God. I forgot about that. Plus, that woman was not 12 or 13 or however old she said she was. She was clearly like 20 years older than she said she was, right? I mean.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Sure.
Courtney Stodden. Is that her name?
Oh, my God. I think that is her name.
I know. Right.
Such a weird podcast.
What's the only episode without Scully in it? Is that 3? The one with the vampires? Because she was on maternity leave?
That's not one of my favorite episodes.
It took me a really long... That one is directed by David Nutter, and that is one of the ones that like never re-aired on FX. It took me a really long time to finally get to see that one.
Interesting.
I know. It's not that interesting, but it is interesting enough to me.
I wasn't being sarcastic. Jeez.
Why?
I'll tell you one of the ones that came to my mind actually when I was trying to assemble a little mini list of ones to watch. The Musings of a Cigarette Smoking Man always stuck in my mind.
Oh yes.
Because I love
JFK.
I love the whole origin story. It's like apparently he's behind he's definitely behind the JFK and Martin Luther King. I guess he doesn't kill Robert Kennedy, though I'm surprised they didn't go for the trifecta.
I know, right?
but the whole time, the fact that he's a wannabe writer.
I know.
And apparently he's been submitting manuscripts, well, clearly for 30 years and finally gets accepted. He gets upset because they had changed the ending. Because I was thinking, don't get upset because it showed up in this trashy magazine. Because a lot of writers did get their start in their self-published in things like, you know, like Playboy soft
Mad magazine,
Mad magazine. But what anyway?
Yeah, well, I think Raoul Bloodworth deserved a better shake than what happened to his character in that trashy magazine, though. Just saying.
I kept thinking the guy who played the homeless guy sitting next to him on the bench looked very familiar. They might have went just a little too far in that episode with him doing the whole Forrest Gump thing on the bench at that point. But I didn't really mind it that much. But I was like, I love that he gives everybody the same tie, you know, for Christmas. Because I'm like, look, Cigarette Smoking Man's got a heart. A very little one.
A very little one. So, like, how has the X-Files kind of, like, affected your life? Like, I mentioned the Sizergy thing, but, like, honestly, I cannot ever, ever, ever see the color cerulean blue without thinking of the episode Pusher. Like, I am ruined forever. Like, there's just so many things like that that bring me back to the X-Files, and maybe it's because I was, like, you know, so, like, scrapbook. Find out all the nitpicking things and blah 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 blah, but there are so many things from like X-Files where I see them in like real life that are totally unrelated and I'm like no.
Yeah, that happens to me too. Like at KFC, the entire time I've worked there, and I've been there over 22 years now, but the entire time, like the saran wrap we used to like wrap stuff up, it's called purity wrap. So like every time I fucking pull the box out, it's like I think of X-Files and the alien virus.
Yep. I can't ever hear about Tunguska without being like, no, that's an X-Files episode before it was a real life thing. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, here, I think I'll go dark here then.
Lake Okoboji in Iowa is in like episode 4, and like me and the kids stayed there like in June for a couple of days. It's a really cool area, but it's nothing like it is in the episode, of course.
I know when I hear anything about incest, I can't help but think of that Home episode.
Oh God, which was not like never allowed on TV again after the first time.
Which could conceivably be the most disturbing X-Files episode, or at least it's definitely in the talk, in the conversation for that. But it's like, whenever I think of incest, I think of that episode, which really screws you up if you're trying to watch porn. But other than that, you know, I just want to make that joke.
Well, what about Postmodern Prometheus?
That's a Dan favorite. I know that.
It's a good app.
I like it. One of my friends shared like a YouTube video that was like, I didn't even click it because it was like an outrage video complaining that like the episode like makes like non-consensual sex look good or something. I'm just like, okay, I'm not even going to watch this fucking episode. But that was the point of that YouTube video that I was not going to fucking give a click to. But no, it's just a goofy fucking episode where like, you know, Cher fans are like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it is. It is super goofy.
Go on, sorry.
But Like, speaking of, like, another one that I really like that is, I feel like it's underrated and doesn't get a lot of like, talk, The Field Where I Died.
Oh, I think I know which one that is.
I, like, genuinely like that one. Like, that's, you know, like, past life regressions, like Mulder's past lives.
Okay, yeah, I do. I have a,
I don't know. I've always
vague memory of that one. Very vague.
That's the whole, like, during the, like, whole Samantha stuff. Right? Like, that whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always enjoyed that one. Another one is, I like everything from season 5, but I don't know if that's because it was my first season or not. That whole thing, like the, like speaking of like Christmas time or whatever, but like the whole Christmas Carol, Emily, All Souls, like all of the ones that deal with Scully's faith as like, you know, somebody that was raised very Catholic and was very Catholic at the time that like I was watching those episodes, like, you know, just the faith, when they went into the faith aspect for Scully, like that actually like really like resonated a lot with me. And I genuinely, you know, enjoyed all of those episodes. Just saying. Also, Gillian Anderson's younger sister plays young Scully in the Christmas Carol one, I think it is.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of neat. I was enjoying the episode that we actually mentioned briefly earlier, and it's the one I'm watching just before. What are you saying? Sorry. For uh-huh. Bad Blood, because I just watched that one again. Bad Blood. Such a good episode, and you know, one of the things that, you know, immediately appealing to me about the episode is knowing that this is one of the many episodes that Vince Gilligan wrote. You know, and everyone who knows me and knows this podcast knows where Breaking Bad is our favorite show. So you know. And all the Breaking Bad connections between X-Files and Breaking Bad are pretty amazing too. Dan, isn't like basically the entire cast of Breaking Bad appeared on the X-Files at one time or another, if I'm not mistaken? I think they all have.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Even Gillian Anderson and David Duchovny?
No, the other way around. Breaking Bad actors originally appeared on the X-Files.
Oh, okay, I get it, yeah, okay, sorry.
Yeah, Aaron Powell's in the Bug episode and like, yeah. I'm not sure about Gus or whatever. But, you know, Michael McKean. And
but it was funny to see the whole
Michael McKean was in Triangle, right? Oh no, I'm sorry. He was a recurring player. Sorry, I'm an idiot. Don't keep going.
He was in Dreamland, and then he was on Lone Gunman.
Dreamland, yes.
But also, just loving the fact that it's with all the Breaking Bad actors that we know that originally appeared on The X-Files, I didn't know that another character from Breaking Bad appeared on The X-Files until I did this rewatch of Bad Blood, because so much of it takes place in an RV park. So I was like, hey, there's the RV from Breaking Bad.
No way. That's awesome.
I don't know if it's the same RV. I'm just making a joke.
Does the woman that plays Skyler in Breaking Bad, is she in The X-Files too?
I believe so. I think they all are. I think all the four principals are. I think Dean Norris is, Cranston is, Paul is, if I'm not mistaken. Aaron Paul's the one I wasn't sure because of how young he would be, but I think he was in one. Dan, do you know?
Aaron Paul was in one in, I think, season 8.
Wait, Aaron Paul is in the X-Files.
Yeah.
So Brian Cranston is in Drive.
Yeah.
Which I remember. Aaron Paul,
yeah. Aaron Paul's in like the Bug episode, and like Jane Lynch is like a bug queen or something, and like Aaron Paul plays like a jackass type person.
Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, I was just, what was I going to say? I'm trying to remember now. It'll come to me.
Is in season 9. So he was in, you know, one of the seasons that I don't really rewatch. I'm pretty much out after 6, which I feel bad about, but I don't know.
I really like 8. I think it's like almost as good as the early seasons. I think there's
actually
like a lot of
really good episodes. Is 8 the one where Annabeth Gish and Robert Patrick are in?
No, that's 9. I mean, I guess they both show up in 8, and then they kind of take over in 9. But 8's the one where just like Krycek's doing a bunch of stuff like in like a lot of the episodes, and like, yeah, and Mulder's gone for the most part.
Right. I think it's because With It and Without are the first two in that. And then, okay, I should go back and, I mean, I've got so many things I need to watch and rewatch, and you would think that, like, during quarantine I would have done that, but I didn't.
Well, yeah, it's nice to watch this kind of stuff now. Like, you know, just, well, at least to have something like this you can watch if you just, like, want to watch, like, comfort food TV. And, like,
that's,
you know,
so,
like,
you know,
I'll watch Cheers or, like, whatever. But, you know, this kind of stuff would make you happy, I think. Watching people get, you know, murdered by, like, viruses and stuff would be make you happy in 2020.
Yeah. Not autoerotic association.
Mm. Well.
Actually, one of the other episodes. Go on.
I'm just saying I've been doing that while Scott's talking, but that's all.
Well, you always do that while I'm talking, I know.
Oh, one of my favorite episodes, Eve, which inspired Eve 6, the band. I love that episode. I had the book. I really love that episode. I don't know why. It was really creepy, but I loved it.
Yeah, that's Fraser's agent. So.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
That's right. I think of her as Fraser's agent.
You had to work perfect. In a Fraser. You just need to make a Star Trek reference before the podcast is over, then you'll be complete, Dan. Actually, one of the ones that I always remembered, and I'm not saying it's among my favorite, but it just happened to stick in my memory for some reason, is the one that's just before Clyde Bruckman's final repose. Was it D.O.P.?
D.P.O.
Oh, D.P.O.
Because, you know, Giovanni Ribisi had a really young Jack Black. And they use that.
That's right, the lightning one.
Yeah, and they use that filter song that I really love. So it's pretty cool.
oh man, yeah, that was a good episode. And I mean, all the seasons—you can't go wrong with seasons 4 and 5. Like, there's just so much. Like, it's like seasons 3, 4, and 5 are just so mythology heavy. Like, and you know, the Monster of the Week stuff hit its stride. That, like, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably the peak of the show.
Yeah,
it's an extended peak, so it's not just like one season,
right? And I feel like after the first movie, it peaked because the first movie was between 5 and 6, and then there was some good stuff in 6, and then I don't know. I feel like after 6, it kind of had like gone downhill. But now apparently 8 was awesome, so I feel like I need to go rewatch that.
Well, yeah, you like Krycek, and he's really good in season 8. And there's, you know, Robert Patrick's good, so I think you'll dig it. With, you know, this time of watching it this time around.
Cool.
Awesome, and hopefully Krycek Krycek Nick Leia holds up in real life. I'm not gonna Google it. I'm just gonna pretend.
Oh dear. Anyway, Do y'all have anything else you'd like to say about the X-Files before we start to get to wrap this up?
No, you better wrap this up because otherwise we'll keep going and that will be bad. So sorry, because I could talk about the X-Files all day. I love the X-Files.
Well, if David Gott's a fan, he's certainly on board to hear a 15-hour podcast, apparently. Alrighty then. So
I don't know what that means, but I'll laugh at it.
he likes to make jokes or whatever online about enjoying how our extremely long podcast or something. I don't know. I don't get it, but everyone else seems to think it's funny. So whatever. Hey, cause I don't have a sense of humor apparently. So anyway, so that's pretty much a wrap on the X-Files, Clyde Bruckman's final repose again. So let's taking a look at the overall countdown and letting you guys know out there what the next one's going to be. So, as you all know, number 20 was House, House's Head, which was from season 4, episode 15. Number 19 was the season 4 finale of Dexter, The Getaway. Number 18 was Firefly, Out of Gas. Number 17, Mr. Robot, 407 Proxy Authentication Required. Number 16, Did It With Dan. I mean, excuse me, ew. It was Hannibal, Mixamono. Number 15.
Yeah, baby.
All right. Number 15 was The Good Wife's episode, Hitting the Fan, which just released not that long ago. A very good episode. You just heard number 14, which was The X-Files, Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose, which means we're up to number 13, which will be coming out next week. And that will be, what, have you never been here before, Dan? Come on, you know where it is. You just have to wait for the symbols to come.
Are you taking a shower?
Number 13 will be Justified. The episode is Bloody Harlan, the season 2 finale. It will be released on December 18th. Two lame jokes about a drum roll, please. Anyway, if you enjoyed this podcast...
Sorry. I thought your computer fan was just like really fucked up. I didn't know what's going on.
I'm going to murder the two of you. So if you enjoy this podcast, chances are you'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's a serious TV drama podcast page. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like the aforementioned and so many others. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, where you can subscribe to our feed and rate and review us there. You can apparently find us on Stitcher.com. Good luck, because no one's downloaded us there ever. But better still, you can go to stvdpodcast.podbean.com. We're all 290. What are we up to now? 290, 291? I'm going to say 291 of our podcasts can be found there. And finally, you can follow us on Twitter. We're occasionally active. The handle is at stvdpodcast. It's STVD as in serious TV drama. Now, I mentioned at the top, Colleen, you are part of at least one, if not several, podcasts. Do you want to reiterate there for any possible new fans?
Yeah, so my main jam is a little show called The Broadcast with Amanda Shani and Colleen. We are available also wherever you can find your podcasts. We release new episodes generally every Friday. We are a bit not safe for work at times. We generally focus on current events and other silly things. Yeah, we were a little bit political for the election, but now we have vowed to, for the rest of the year and moving forward, to kind of get back into our silly selves, which we do. Our latest episode that will be out this week is actually, I believe that we decided to call it A Woody for Christmas. So if that leaves you with any kind of desire to hear it, there you go.
Well, there's something about desire, I know that.
Some people really want a Woody. Just saying.
There you go. Oh, I forgot to mention with our upcoming, so next week, Justified, Brian will actually be joining for that podcast, because I thought it was only appropriate to have a Kentucky lawyer talking about a Kentucky lawman. So plus Jack couldn't do that one, so Brian.
He was justified.
So Brian is Plan B.
Oh, don't tell him that.
I told him that from the get-go. Don't worry. No, but I said Plan B, but the B stands for Brian, so it's okay.
Oh, I love that. That's actually really clever. Oh, my God. If I ever have Brian on the broadcast again, which he was on before, he has been on before. If I ever have him on again, though, I'm going to call it Plan B with Plan B. I don't know. I'll workshop it, but I'm stealing that.
Oh, that's actually even more eerily appropriate for your podcast.
Sure is.
You know, so just remember, you have to record the morning after. Anyway.
What if it's always the morning after? Hi-o.
There's got to be a morning after. How did they not put that? How did they not do an ad campaign with that? Anyway, Colleen, thank you so much for joining our podcast. I think it's been a lot of fun. I hope you had fun as well.
I had a blast. Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. And Dan, thank you for being awake and alive and active in this podcast. This is the Dan that we love to hear on the podcast, Dan. So very happy.
Yeah, I'm just glad that I sobered up after my one drink. Of my margarita made me really drunk for like an hour straight, and then I sobered up after that. So
wait, what? You had a margarita?
I had a margarita. Went out for my son's birthday party, and I had a margarita, and I just got fucking bombed on this one margarita to the point where like my mom had to drive my car home. So.
Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. Well, happy birthday to your son.
Yeah, he's 15, so it's
holy crap.
I know. Yeah. Creeping me out.
I remember when he was like less than 10. I've known you for a long time now.
That's true. Many years. Many good years.
Wait, how old is your daughter then?
She's 12.
12. Yeah, okay.
She'll be 13 next August.
So. Okay. They're 2 years apart.
Yeah.
Two and a half. Cool.
Yep.
Crazy. Yes, man.
So, yeah, I was really drunk on this margarita. So, but.
The days, right, Scott? Those are the days.
getting drunk off of one drink? I don't know. What day was that? When I was 14? I don't remember a day like that. I've been having a drink this entire podcast, and I don't feel any different than when it started. Anyway, so.
I've had half of a raspberry White Claw with a lot of LaCroix. I'm trying to lose weight, so. I'm trying to make the whole 100 calorie drink last for the whole night.
I'm trying to. I'm doing a whole only protein and vegetables thing and not eating for huge chunks of time this week.
Are you doing the
intermittent fasting or something?
Intermittent fasting.
I think it's a variation on that. It's my version of it, so we'll see. My weight has dropped a pound each day for the last couple of days, even though someone told me, you know, you shouldn't get on the scale every day. It's like, dude, I get on the scale after I use the bathroom every time. What are you, who are you talking to? I'm absurdly obsessed with that.
Yeah, but you only really lose like 0.3 to 0.5 of a pound every time you poop. So.
Well,
oh, maybe you have big poops. Maybe I don't. I don't know.
I don't know if I should. I was about to refer to people should listen to the Crown podcast, but that's about a different issue. The bowel movement conversation was something I had in physical therapy recently, my entire life I grade them as small, medium, and large, and then there's the ones that I call the game changers. And why am I talking about this on the podcast? All right, enough. So. I want to say goodnight to you, the two of you. Goodnight to everyone out there. There's two people. I'm not used to having two people here. I was just going to let Colleen have the last word, but Dan's here. Dan, you know, you can talk anytime. So, Colleen, you can have the last word. She wasn't expecting that. She doesn't know what to say now. Dead silence. All right, that's the... best ending to a podcast ever. Wow. I think she's doing an impression of you when you do that to me. All right. Dan, do you want to say something or are you both going to go? Oh, she left.
I can't do better than that.
Oh, no. What? We're still recording. I don't know if Colleen just got knocked out of it or she left on purpose. I'm assuming she didn't leave on purpose because I need to ask her about posting another podcast. So anyway, good night to all you guys out there. Dan, if you want to end this so I can press the button.
I'm just trying to think of an X-Files episode with some dooskies getting dropped, and I really can't think of much, so I guess.
Hence the title, Squeeze. See, she would have loved that joke. Why did she leave?
Oh, she's trying to come here. She got booted. Let me add her back to the call so she can say goodbye. Let's see. Add people. Colleen, okay.
Just so everyone out there knows, this is clearly the forces of nature making sure that this is a 90-minute podcast because we were actually going to end a little short tonight. So I'm thrilled with this. Not sarcastic, actually.
It won't let me call her back. She must be having a Skype issue.
Oh well, we'll never know. I'll probably be getting messages from her any moment now. Anyway, Colleen, thanks in absentia. There's her message. Oh, she's getting Skype is circling and circling. She's trying to get back in. I'm willing to stall just for another minute or two and see if she can get back in. If you like, Dan. I'm just going to message. Hey, the drama of Colleen being lost in the podcast might make this a worthwhile listen. I'm just going to let her know. We'll stall. For a couple more minutes.
Oh, yeah, you keep saying she's unavailable.
So like I said, the next one's going to be Justified, and I cannot reveal what the show or episode is going to be after that, but I do believe, Dan, you are going to be co-hosting that one. And I think you're going to be pairing up with Jamie, so it's going to be kind of another little tag team kind of a situation for that one. But I just can't reveal what it is yet. But for so let folks know, that'll actually, in fact, I'm pretty sure that'll actually be our last podcast of the year because I think that'll be released the final week of the year. We'll get it recorded before you all got your stuff to do for the holidays. But so that's something else to look forward to. Plus, Jamie hasn't been on the podcast since I guess since we wrapped up The Boys. Now that I think about it. All right, I don't know if she is still trying to get in, but I don't know if we should really keep stalling like this. So I think I'm going to have to call it and end it here. So good night to you. Good night to everyone out there. Dan, if you want to say good night, feel free.
Good night, everybody. Been nice being back on the show.
Yay!